In the cinema calendar, September marks the pivot from a long summer of action and superhero movie releases to an autumnal stretch of prestige pictures that Hollywood likes to roll out in its fourth quarter. The fall movie season also marks the shift from movies targeted at the younger end of the demographic spectrum to films that appeal to a decidedly more mature theatergoer. I'm Charles Horak, and you're listening to On Film. Two new films released last week could not be more different, but are competing for similar adult demographics. Joining me to discuss the new films Ad Astra and Downton Abbey, I'm happy to have back on the program frequent On Film contributor Kyle Alvarado. Good morning.
Morning, Chuck.
And thank you for also filling in from time to time as guest host of On Film.
Always happy to.
So right off the bat, Ad Astra, much anticipated, a lot of buzz going into this.
Yeah.
Lay it out for us.
People who know me know that I love a good existential science fiction film.
Yep.
I shove, you know, Tarkovsky, Solaris down anybody's queue any chance I get. And this film is very much kind of in that vein. Kind of the log line of the film is that an astronaut named Roy McBride, played by Brad Pitt, is essentially drafted into a mission to go trekking all the way across the solar system to essentially track down his father, played by Tommy Lee Jones. And I'll leave it there because the less you know about the film, the better. And I think part of the problem, not problem, but the trailers do a disservice to this film. You know, you watch the trailers and it's pushing this modern space epic along the lines of Interstellar and Gravity, when in reality, this film is very slow moving. It's very contemplative, more along the lines of Solaris 2001. I've even heard comparisons to Apocalypse Now, which I can see. Now, having said that, I really enjoyed the film. One of the things that I kind of adored about it is the way that co-writer and director James Gray sort of takes these themes of parental responsibility, toxic masculinity, and sort of weaves them into these episodic pieces as Pitt's character jumps from planet to planet. What do you think?
Yeah, you know, the log lines are great. This could easily be like in space, no one can hear you cry. but I love the film as well, and partially because of how different it is from a lot of science fiction we grew up with. But this is a great age for it. I was just thinking, coming out of that, you know, we've had films like Arrival, Blade Runner 2049, Annihilation, First Man, that are really somber affairs.
Yeah.
And this is, space is the context in which the story plays out. It's also a text. And James Gray, the writer, director that you mentioned, knows we know these films, these great science fiction films, 2001. I love that you brought up Apocalypse Now.
Yeah.
I felt halfway through there is a voiceover. Brad Pitt's character is voiceovering
a lot,
and telling us, emoting, you know, he's not emoting in real time, but we're hearing his thoughts.
Yeah.
And
it's a different performance for him,
and
too.
And it felt like the journey that is occurring in the middle of the Heart of Darkness, which is Francis Ford Coppola's Apocalypse Now. And his father becomes, is set up kind of as this Kurtz-like Conradian figure that he's got to go stop. But we won't give any more away
that. Yeah. It's worth noting, though, the way that the future, the near future, as the film calls it, is realized.
Yeah.
Is I haven't seen something like that since 2001. These little nods to corporations in space,
yes.
And it was really quite something.
Virgin Galactic really is galactic.
$125 for a pillow pack.
And this is not an homage to a lot of those great science fiction films, but there are nods to them. They're clearly inspired, the production design, the oral atmosphere, the tone of many of the sequences will be reminiscent without specifically drawing on that knowledge. And
yeah.
So I love the way that Gray makes his own film, but acknowledges that these other films exist in our world. And that the politics of the era, there's so much detail. This is one of those films you could see multiple times because there's a lot of detail going on in the background that is not specifically telegraphed right at you. But the world that Brad Pitt walks through is very complicated. And we get little insights into what the bigger world is, but it really is this hermetically sealed. It reminded me a bit of First Man, last year's film about the lunar landing. And, you know, we get Neil Armstrong is not this giant heroic figure, but this very sad someone who's carrying this deep psychological wound with him, as Brad Pitt does. And I think Brad Pitt has become one of the great masters of minimalism in acting.
Yeah.
I mean, it's fascinating, this performance.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be interesting when award season comes around.
His performance, it hits you when you least expect it. And and this sort of ties into to my one criticism of the film is that you have his wife, played by Liv Tyler. You know, she kind of floats in and out. She's basically a ghost in the film.
Mm-hmm.
And sort of interesting that there are certain elements of that character that you want to see more of, that I kind of wish Gray would kind of relent and then fill in a little bit more.
There's also an amazing production design, though, which is all about what I call cinema space. This is not one of those space films where everything is accurate. A lot of the spaces that Pitt moves through, both a colony on the moon and Mars, do not look like space stations. These are psychological spaces that he's moving through, and it's clear that James Gray is making a film about so much more than just how do you build a space station, what does it look like, and does everything work right?
Yeah.
Because the spaces the Pitt is moving through make no sense being built on the moon or
beautiful.
Mars. But psychologically, artistically, they serve the narrative, and it's a really mature film. I have to say I got a little teary-eyed seeing the 20th Century Fox logo right off the bat.
Oh, yeah.
This may be the last film we ever get to see, a new film with that logo. And I was thinking, would Disney, who now owns Fox, ever have greenlit this film?
Probably not.
So I worry that we're going to get less and less of these kinds of films. But it's an adventurous film. It's an ambitious film. And I read I don't know if you saw that same Variety article earlier this week about Ad Astra, about Downton Abbey, the other film we're going to talk
Power
about
of
in a
the
minute.
Boomers.
But how these films are drawing much heavier from a more mature demographic. And trying to wake Hollywood up that there are still theater goers out there that are not comic book fans.
Yeah. What was it? Downton Abbey opened up at number one. Ad Astra was second, if I remember correctly. And it's nice to see these films be released for audiences that aren't just, you know, franchise fodder.
How did you feel about some of the elements that sort of nod to these other greater science fiction films or even Apocalypse Now?
I enjoyed it. I think it's sort of nice when a film understands its place in the science fiction canon.
Mm-hmm.
I think it pays respects to those films. I think, you know, when you compare, I don't know if you saw High Life, Claire Denis' High Life.
Right, that's another good one for this year.
And I feel like that film fully understands that it doesn't have to be beholden to these pillars. So it's sort of nice that you can have, in the same year, these two very different approaches to science fiction.
And of course, the father-son dynamic, the space epic journey to find him finally reunited with his long-lost father is right out of Solaris, as you point out. And I'm sure that got you going.
Oh, yeah.
Well, among the box office stories surrounding Ad Astra, as you mentioned, is that it's doing very well with older audiences. I think Variety reported that over 65% of the audience was over 25, and a lot of that percentage was over 35.
Yeah.
So it's interesting how that's drawing. And speaking of box office performance, mature audiences, the new film Downton Abbey had almost 50% of its audience over the age 55. And as you mentioned, outperformed Ad Astra, this little bitty film that could. But box office receipts are not a good metric to measure the quality of film. And in that regard, Downton Abbey is a mixed bag for me. For devotees of PBS's long-running historical drama, Downton Abbey, the good news is that all your favorite characters are back. In fact, all of the members of one of TV's biggest ensembles are here, and they make room for a few new faces. For those unfamiliar with the show, Downton Abbey is both a place and a microcosm of British social order and class distinction circa early 20th century. For us Americans, I think we were perhaps fascinated by the show's intimate relationships and rigid boundaries between professional servants and those they serve. The television show functioned as an elaborate upstairs-downstairs epic, taking us over its six seasons from 1912 to 1926, which gave the series and its writer Julian Fellowes wide latitude to explore the changing dynamics in British society as the world modernized and the series charted the ups and downs of a country estate through turbulent times, and the film largely continues that exploration. Downton Abbey, the movie, picks up where the show left off 6 years ago. We're in 1927, and the Grantham estate is all abuzz with word that the king and queen will visit. Julian Fellowes is back as writer, and the extensive ensemble cast have slipped easily back into their characters and proper positions within the abbey. The royal visit taxes the household, and the film devotes a good half of its runtime to elaborate preparations for the king and queen's short visit. Once the royal couple arrive, the staff and residents of Downton Abbey work together to put their best foot forward and maintain old traditions that we, of course, know are on the brink of disappearing. For the Downton Abbey faithful, there's much to gorge on here, perhaps too much. With enough plot lines and intrigue to have sustained almost an entire season of the television show, the film feels far too breathless in its pacing, and the historic details, costumes, and finery of Downton don't feel as sumptuous or as refined as they were when displayed on a smaller screen. But never mind, Downton Abbey is a film that extends a beloved storyline that many have waited 6 years to pick up again. And if this latest tale is a bit middling, just wait. Judging by its box office success, I'm sure there's another Downton not too far in our future that will get things just right. So, recommended, I think, for devotees. But yeah. I'm not sure people unfamiliar with this will get much out of this film.
Yeah, yeah. Were you familiar with the series before?
I was. My wife and I were avid watchers of it. And, it, you know, this is one of those films. It's like watching a Star Trek movie for me.
Yeah.
It's, you just want to see those people again.
Mm-hmm.
They became part of your life. And but
yeah, well, so I came into it as a non-fan. I'd seen a few episodes and had been aware of the major kind of plot points in the series.
Seems too much.
Actually, it was okay. I mean, I wasn't bored. I didn't feel overwhelmed. I think it's better if you watch it with an audience. I was with a crowd, and they were clearly fans, and
there were a lot of people cheering.
Yeah,
and laughing.
You can feel, and it's nice to see like
it's a fan film, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
For older people. Fascinating.
And it's nice to see that they got, you know, a big budget to do this kind of stuff. So I'm happy to see the films like this are being made and adapted.
It's just so spread thin, you know. There's over 30 plus characters in Downton Abbey, and they all get a moment to shine. And in 2 hours, it's just a lot to try to cram in the twists and turns. And so, having watched the entire six seasons, maybe because you were new to that, it just didn't have the same pacing and slower feel, which would have been appropriate for a film about 1927. And curious, I don't know if you found the widescreen, extreme widescreen cinematography an odd choice, because the framing and compositions are a bit off in the film, which
I didn't mind them too much, actually. I sort of felt, you know, I think if you're going to adapt a television show into a movie, I think there's a certain cinematic language that you need to maybe try and step up to. And I know that the director of the film had been a longtime director of the series.
Uh-huh.
So I wonder if, you know, his approach to it was to maybe sort of pump it up and try a couple of different things with the shots. I don't know. I didn't mind it.
Well, anything on your list that we should check out streaming-wise?
Yes,
quickly?
Actually. I have been in love with Netflix's Our Planet docuseries. It's a David Attenborough, Sir David Attenborough, 8-part miniseries exploring global warming and how nature has sort of responded to it, how it's healed, how it's been damaged and changed. Real beautiful stuff.
Fantastic.
I enjoyed it.
And of course, there's so much coming into our homes that's worth seeing. So thanks for coming in, chatting about these two films, and give us a recommendation for our TVs. Get ready for the fall movie season. Loads more films coming. I've been discussing the new films Ad Astra and Downton Abbey with frequent on-film contributor Kyle Alvarado. We both heartily recommend Ad Astra's story of a middle-aged son's journey to find his father floating somewhere in the rings of Neptune. And we'd suggest Downton Abbey, I think. Both of us agree. But for me, mostly for devotees of and fans of the series, newcomers might want to start by binging the series before they go to see this film or wait for it to stream itself. On Film's engineer and producer is Seth Van Meter. An archive of past programs is available online at ktep.org. I'm Charles Horak. Thank you for listening to On Film.